Hello and welcome to Korean Context, a behind-the-scenes conversation with the scholars, artists, and opinion makers who bridge our two worlds. This podcast was brought to you by the Korea Economic Institute in Washington, D.C. I'm Martha Legutsky, and I'll be your host today. Joining me in the Korean Context studio today is Mr. Sam Yoon. Thank you so much for being here today.
My pleasure.
We have a lot to talk about, so let's just jump right in. Did you have an idea that you would pursue a career in public service before you graduated college?
Oh, no, not at all. I always tell people, and if I knew I was going to go into politics, I would have made more friends in college. You know, I would have joined one of these eating clubs, you know, at Princeton and been real social. But I think I was a little bit of a hermit, so I had no idea. It's something that came to me later. I mean, it was a process of self-discovery over a long period of time that, what it takes to be a political leader, a public leader, maybe those things that I'm suited for. And it's a matter of interest, too, that some of the ways that my career could have gone when I was doing affordable housing development, community development, those branches of ways that I could have really focused on finance and gotten really good at crunching numbers and put together deals, I could have really specialized in something like that. I could have done more of the development piece, the real estate development, and but for some reason I resisted the idea of specializing and getting expertise in one thing, and found that I was more interested in how people work, and relationships and how things get done through that. And that was that's a lot about politics.
So you landed in Boston. I've actually known about you for far longer than I've known you, and that's because I'm actually from the Boston area.
Is that right?
Yeah.
The Boston area, so where?
So I grew up in Lexington and then Weston. So yep, okay. Always, within 15 minutes of Boston itself. So I actually was no longer in Boston by the time you were sort of an up-and-coming figure there, but I was still hearing about you from, my parents are home, and I'd come home and read the Boston Globe, and there you were. So actually, for me, it's a great pleasure to talk to you today. But I wanted to zoom in a little bit on your career in Boston. It's mm-hmm. occupied the last, 7 years or so.
Well, I landed in Boston to go to graduate school in 1993, so that's I've been in that area for 17, 18 years.
Right, you were at the Kennedy School.
But the Kennedy School till 95, and then kind of from 95 to 2005, 10 years I was doing, in the nonprofit world.
Okay.
So, yeah, from 2005 then to last year.
Right, yeah. So 2005 is the big year you were elected to the Boston City Council.
That's right.
Mm. And you are the first person ever to have been elected at large on the first try.
There was one person who did it in 1980 in the 80s.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And she happened to be the city clerk, but it's very rare. And everyone that I talked to, all the politicos in Boston, said, "That's great, Sam. Just make sure after you lose that you run again and you run again, because it takes it takes more than one time." That's yeah. all the folks who are in office right now. That's kind of. Yeah, that was their story.
Well, you did win, and you were the first Asian American to hold that position, to my knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And you went on to be reelected to the same position the following term.
Yep.
So that's 4 years you did that.
Yeah.
And then you decided that you should move up in the world a bit and try your hand at running for mayor. That was a huge decision for you, especially in Boston, where you do have a long tradition of Irish American and Italian American leadership in the municipal government there.
Yeah.
How did you come to decide to run for mayor?
See, wasn't I? This is the non-politician identity that I have. I didn't think of it as a step up in the way that you would think. Oh, well, if I want to advance my career, then obviously move to this position, and from that position get the next position. There's a way to think of a political career in that sort of way, like it's a ladder, and your goal is to just climb the ladder. For me, is what seeing what I saw on the inside of City Hall for 4 years, I realized that there was a lot of change that was needed, that Boston's real potential was being held back by an old system and an old way of looking at government and governing, and that there's a lot of new leadership that could be coming up and new ideas that could be, you know, making Boston an even greater city than it was, and had everything to do with, you know, the structure. So, and a city councilor, if you don't understand Boston politics or Boston government, you might not realize that city councilors actually don't have that much power. I was elected citywide. I was in the same ballot as the mayor of Boston all over the city, but that position is a pretty weak position. The mayor has all the power. And so if I wanted to challenge that and to tell people that, you know, we need a new way of doing things in the city, there are two ways I could do that. You know, I could do it as a city councilor from that very weak position, and people would say, that's a great platform, Sam, you know, and pat me on the back, pat me on the head, or make it an issue and put my money where my mouth is and say, I'm going to run for mayor, and if you elect me, I'm actually going to implement that system and bring a sense of check and balance to government, which I think is important. You know, bring new people with new ideas into city government, which I thought was vital. I could do that, and that's the option that I chose. Because the other way to have run for a third term as a city councilor, I mean, that was an option. I could have said, well, I've run, you know, I've won once, reelected once, stay on for a third term, and I think as an incumbent at that point, it would not have been too difficult. But a part of me said, you know what, you're going to become part of the system, the very system that you think, you know, should change. If you stay on for another term because you thought you could just occupy the seat without too much effort, that's exactly what was wrong with everything that I saw in city government. So I decided, you know, in life you have to take risk. You know, change doesn't come easy, but it takes people to, you know, to take the risk to go for that change, and I did. It didn't work out the way I wanted it to.
Well, but, I mean, it didn't, right? I mean, you didn't get the position, but I tell you, I definitely felt the sense of fresh air, you know, just the availability of this new face and these new ideas during the campaign itself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was, you know, that stood for something on its own.
I appreciate that. And it so happened, what I'm really proud of, now that I've left Boston, I kind of see it from afar, but the two seats that were vacated on the city council, it was me and Michael Flaherty, also at large, you know, who ran for mayor. So two out of the four at-large seats were then filled by two, actually, first-time candidates.
Mm-hmm.
One was the second Latino city councilor in the city's history, whose father was on the city council, and I served with him. The other is the first African-American woman to serve on the Boston City Council ever. Both ran their first time, filled those vacant seats. A third vacancy on the city council was filled by somebody who came in fifth place, African-American, young, kind of new generation person by the name of Tito Jackson. And so the council does have an incredibly fresh face. And, you know, I do like to think that because I stuck my neck out in 2005, that people got that confidence, like, if he could do it, I could do it too. The advantage was, like, I had no idea what I was doing then. And so I just did it. And I told people, you know, if I'd known more about Boston City politics and its history, there's no way I would have run. You know, I would have gotten too spooked. But
well, sometimes
luckily,
it's better not to know.
Better not to know.
Well, you know, it does seem that you are, you among others, are at the forefront of this new generation in Boston, where you do get a lot more diversity in terms of race and gender and wherewithal to get to these positions of leadership within the city government and within the general region. You're identified pretty strongly with the Korean American population, whether or not you like it, because you are quite well known as a politician, and obviously because you are Korean American, people do identify with that. Yep. I wonder, to what extent did you feel that the Asian community and the Asian American community identified with you and mobilized behind you for your campaign?
Oh, it was very strong, and I'm very proud of it. And it was both an honor to be the first and then to win as the first, and it was also an important responsibility that I felt I was taking on, being the first. And the Asian community, the Korean community in particular, this was really big. And if I were, you know, just a Korean American young person in the Boston area seeing this go on, I think I'd be really excited too. You know, I realized that in politics there's a lot of symbolism in politics, and this more cynical self that I was, you know, maybe years ago would say, well, you know, it's symbolic, therefore, you know, how important is it?
It's funny, you know, that you were more cynical years ago.
I was, you know, I think I graduated from the Kennedy School of Government, you know, in 95, very cynical about government, which is one of the reasons I went into nonprofits. I was like, you know, this is where the real change, you know, happens. How do you move an institution like government at any level to make change? But the symbolism really is important, because at the final analysis, when people are motivated to act, it's because of an idea. When they're motivated to act for the right reasons, we're motivated to act for money, for power, you know, for all those other things. That's natural human nature. But when you're motivated, and people are motivated to do something that is going to have lasting value, it's because of something. It's because of an ideal, an abstraction, and sometimes that can be represented in a person. And it's maybe even not as important, you know, who the person is, but what they stand for. So you have to take that responsibility seriously, and I did, and it was just it was exciting, you know, to see when I, you know, the election night and folks, the, you know, not just the Asian faces, but especially, you know, the Asian faces who were looking at me, and I'm looking at them and thinking, this has never happened before, and it just happened now, and it's because of their support, you know, and that we can all enjoy this together. This is really exciting thing. I'm so glad I was part of that.
You founded or co-founded the Asian Political Leadership Fund.
Yes.
That is an organization that promotes Asians to roles of candidacy, running for different positions of leadership. Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah. You know, so one of the ways that I wanted to use this position as an Asian politician is to encourage more people to do the same, and in the political arena specifically. And there's such a lack of resources for Asian Americans who are interested in elective office in terms of money, for one. I mean, the Asian Political Leadership Fund is a 527, and therefore it's a vehicle to apply resources for someone's campaign, as well as to do education, but the education is really to advance their campaign. And to my knowledge, there aren't, you know, if there are any other mechanisms out there, I don't know about them. I think they're that few. And so in this new era where, you know, campaign finance is, the rules are even more loose than they were before, I think there's going to be a strong, you know, need for people to think creatively, and especially people who have experience in that world, to create ways for donors to get involved in the political system, especially for the Asian community, because there's so, you know, few who have done that. And that whole world was new to me, you know, about how to set up these special funds. But with the help of people who are more knowledgeable than I, so we set that up. And we actually used a lot of our resources to educate the Korean community about Barack Obama in his presidential race. So the technicalities is you can't coordinate with the Obama campaign and say, where should we spend our money? You have to decide yourself. But your decision is to do an education kind of campaign and say, here are the choices that are before you. Here's a choice that I personally, since this is my fund, I'm going to make on election day. Just think you ought to know. By the way, election day is this and this and that. So this is the kind of ways that you can influence, you know, the outcome of a campaign through that educational motive. And so I encourage people to, you know, to look into our fund if you're so moved. But yeah, it's something another kind of a piece of what I've done that has some value even after I've left office.
The Asian population in the United States is ever growing. It's actually growing quite rapidly these days. But we don't really see a reflection of that in government, in leadership. Why do you think that is?
And in particular, I'm going to follow that question with a question.
Go for it.
Koreans, Korean Americans,
yeah,
in
particular,
because the Chinese and Japanese American, you know, Mike Honda, you know, who's almost seen as like the grandfather of Asian politics, and before him Norman Mineta, you know, they were the trailblazers. Right now we have, I don't know how many Chinese Americans in Congress. Judy Chu was just elected, first Chinese American woman. There's David Wu in Oregon. You know, at the city level, you got John Liu, who's actually a friend of mine, who's the comptroller of the city of New York. Mm-hmm. But Korean Americans, you know, there are, even within the Asian community, proportionally, we should have more, but we don't. And, but first, you know, to Asians in general, what is it about our culture that has prevented us from going into this? Well, you know, every story that I've heard from any politician that I've met personally has a story that goes back to their childhood and about how politics, and I guess maybe I'm thinking of the Boston politicians. Maybe there's something unique about Boston in one sense. Maybe I'm, you know, my perspective is biased. Nevertheless, you know, some of the strongest politicians come from Boston, and I know that there's a kind of multi-generational, you know, kind of interest in politics that they just grow up with, and they do actually see politicians as heroes. They do kind of see them as role models. But for us Asians, that's really not the case. You know, our role models are, I don't know, you know, our parents, yeah, if they're, you know, kind of first or second generation immigrants, value, you know, doing well financially, you know, being stable economically, and going into those professions where you can, you know, raise a family and be stable and not rock the boat. Politics is about rocking the boat.
Yeah.
You know, it in an election is either you win or your opponent does, and so you have to be out there. You have to have a, you know, a public persona and say I'm important enough for all of you to be listening to me right now. And there's something that you know, that doesn't mingle, or that doesn't, maybe not as consistent with, you know, Asian values traditionally, but
it's getting there. I mean,
but it's getting there.
You know, I mean, with the start of organizations like yours, I mean, you also have a lot of networking initiatives to try to get Asian Americans in contact with one another and having these conversations.
That's right. That's right. So there is you know, I'm not pessimistic at all. I'm very optimistic about where we go forward with this, because I think there is a crop of young Asian Americans and Korean Americans who are just taking that plunge, kind of doing it, being first timers. In fact, the year that I ran for mayor in New York City, there were 5 Korean Americans running for city council of New York City. That's unprecedented, given that on the New York City Council there had been, till that point, only 1 Asian American for 10 years. And that's John Liu, who actually ran for comptroller. But 5 Korean Americans in a single year running for these seats. None of them won. But you know what? That's okay, because they put themselves on the map in a way that has set up an expectation in the New York City electorate that Korean Americans are a force. They're going to be on the ballot. I have to choose.
And they have things to say.
And they had things to say about, you know, about the city. So they were listening to. So I see that bubble kind of rising in the future.
Well, I don't want to keep you too long, but I just had one more question for you. You're actually currently in D.C.
Yes.
You've migrated south.
Yeah.
The weather's a little bit more agreeable here.
Yeah.
And you're now the executive director of the National Alliance of Community Economic Development Associations.
Yes.
And would you tell me a little bit about what you're up to these days?
Yeah. So NACEDA.
That's much long easier.
Acronym. Yeah, right, right. Yeah, but I want to get the pronunciation in there. NACEDA.
NACEDA.
Is an organization whose members are state associations. And each of these state or metropolitan associations were founded in order to promote affordable housing, small business lending, community development, you know, in their states. And about 4 years ago, some of these state leaders, and they could be Housing Action Illinois, that could be the North Carolina Association for Community Development, you know, they could be East Bay housing organizations in Oakland, you know. So groups like these got together and said, you know, we need a national voice to represent our interests in Washington, D.C. And so this is that organization. Community development is one of those things that is hard to define, but it's been a large part of my life. Actually, it's been a longer part of my life than politics. I went to the Kennedy School, got a master's in public policy in 95, but I took this course called community development and realized, wow, there are this network of nonprofits working in partnership with government, you know, and the private sector and banks to fulfill the dreams, basically, of regular residents to take control over their own future in terms of building housing that they can afford if they're earning a living wage, you know, for small businesses to get the, you know, financing that they need to build that store or run that business. And they have a view of the community where they say, you know, this neighborhood is, you know, we want to think about public safety in this neighborhood. We want to think about parks and recreation for this neighborhood. We want to think about job opportunities, how the streets work, where the parking goes. That comprehensive view of community development I just thought it was like an amazing movement, you know, because that's what it is. It's a movement that started in the 70s, and there's a network of nonprofits out there that are doing that. Promoting this at a national level is a new experience for me because, in a weird way, you know, I don't actually get to see a lot of their work on the ground. Whereas in Boston, it was happening in my neighborhood, in my streets. There were neighborhood development corporations, nonprofits right around where I lived. But I see that coming to D.C. and looking at this from a national perspective, talking to our state leaders, that there's a lot that our federal government has to, you know, needs to pay attention to in terms of who we are. Because I and our members, you know, tell me that, you know, had it not been for them, our economy, you know, the economic recovery would not have the legs that it does right now. That there would be a lot more people who fell through the safety nets that they provide had it not been for doing foreclosure counseling for residents in foreclosure, or to ensure that people can ensure that there's a certain amount of affordable housing going up in the next building, so that people in that neighborhood can live. So these are the issues that we promote, and I'm glad to be here in the sense that I'm kind of combining my experience in politics as well as thinking about policy at the federal level for this kind of activity, and bringing back those, you know, affordable housing, community development roots that were an important part of my life in Boston. So it kind of combines all three, and it's a great position to be in.
Absolutely. In D.C. especially, I mean, whether or not you think you're in the field of politics, you are.
You are.
Yeah, you are to some extent.
It's a 24/7 sort of thing here. Yeah, yeah, exactly. It is.
Well, Sam, thank you so much for being here today for the interview. It's a great pleasure to speak with you, and we look forward to seeing where you go in the future.
Thank you. It was mine.
For more information about this episode, this podcast, and upcoming KEI events, please check out our podcast page at keia.podbean.com. As always, please feel free to send any questions, comments, or suggested podcast topics to me at podcast@keia.org. I'd love to hear from you, so please don't be shy. Well, that's all for now. Thanks so much for listening. It was a pleasure to have you, and we look forward to seeing you next time on Korean Context. Bye.